I am Marnie Merrilies and I'm a psychologist specialising in high performance. My guest today is Mick Terrell. Mick Terrell is the world champion in heavyweight bare knuckle boxing. In today's podcast, we are going to be discussing mental toughness and what it takes to be a world champion. Mick shares with us why he eats cherry pie before a big fight and the importance of accepting worst-case scenario as part of his mental preparation. Mick reveals how he copes with injury and setbacks and describes in detail his physical and mental preparation. It's a discussion that I'm sure everyone, whether you're a fan of bare-knuckle boxing or not, will find interesting and informative, especially with regards to the mental preparation leading up to a fight and the dedication and hard work required to become a world champion. Before we begin, I'd like to emphasise the reason for this podcast is my passion in performance psychology and the sharing of information with the general public about the benefits of performance psychology and performance psychology tools. Mick Terrell is the current world champion heavyweight bare knuckle boxer. Mick faced Arnold Adams in the rematch for the vacant BKFC heavyweight championship on December the 2nd, 2023 at BKFC 56. He won by fourth round knockout and became the new world champion heavyweight bare knuckle boxer. Mick's professional bare knuckle record shows in 10 matches he had 9 wins and 1 loss. In his personal life, Mick lives in North Shields, England, and is married to Carmen Terrell and is father of 3 children and is soon to become a granddad. So Mick, you've got an important fight coming up in a couple of weeks' time. Do you want to tell those listening and watching about it?
Yeah, well, I'll be fighting over in Elliot, downtown Elliot. It's against Lorenzo Hunt. He's a 2-weight champion, middleweight and cruiserweight. He's called up the heavyweight. He's very good, very explosive. Obviously, he's wanting to take the title off me, and he's hoping to be the 3-time champion. So it'll be a hard fight. I think I'll be able to overcome him.
So how did you get into bare knuckle boxing?
It was an accident, really. Obviously, I was a kickboxer and a Thai boxer originally. There was a person called Cowboys Michael Quinn, an Irish fella. I don't know if you've seen the documentary on the, what's it called, Netflix. Anyways, it's called Knuckle. There's a family called Quinn McDonald's. So anyways, he's one of them, Cowboys Quinn. So he was looking for an opponent because his opponent had pulled out. And I took a fight on a week's notice, and that's how I got in.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
It was a hard fight. He dropped us in the first round. I still can't remember the whole fight. But he dropped us. I got up and I ended up beating him.
Oh, wow. Well done.
I still can't remember it now.
So how did you get to the level that you are now, like world champion?
Well, I was already fighting at quite a high level and anyways in the kickboxing. I've always just been disciplined with my training. So, I train non-stop. Like, I'm 40 now. Still training, 4-5 hours a day. That's my hobby. And if it's your hobby, I just kept going. And obviously, I don't drink, don't smoke, don't take drugs. So, it just prevailed through. So, there's a lot of younger lads, younger than me, that are starting to retire. And my body's able to keep going.
Yeah. So, what would you say your strengths are?
I've got good determination, good stamina. I like fighting. I think that's it.
Yeah, it's a key thing, isn't it, when you enjoy something that you do?
It's a funny thing, because, when you're in the gym, I hate training. There's a treadmill there for, honestly, I'm contemplating life every day when I go on the treadmill. But I run every day regardless. And I honestly hate running. But I know I've got to do that for the fight, and I love fighting. If I could take a magic pill and get really fit, I would take a magic pill. Unfortunately, I can't, so I've got to spend hours and hours and hours just for them 10 minutes.
So what are some of the high points of your career?
Obviously, when you're winning, it's great. There's no better feeling when you win a fight. It's you're out there and you're fighting another individual equally trained. So when you do win, it's a great accomplishment, especially when you're winning world titles. I've won lots of world titles, but like that last one was something special. It's a big production. It's a big show. Like I've already won 3 world titles in bare knuckle, but that one was bigger, you know, it was better. It was on a massive stage, and it was in America against an American. So like I've actually travelled over there to do it, you know. So it's euphoric, really, you know. You get the win, mind you. Straight after I had to go in the shower, I had just getting 42 stitches. So like my face is sore. So you're over the moon, but you're sore as well, you know. But it's a great feeling.
Yeah. Double-edged sword.
It hurts. It's a painful game.
I saw that the interview you did afterwards, your face was, yeah.
Yeah, it was. That's right. But if I'd have lost, it would have been worse, you know. And luckily I won, you know. So yeah. You've got a little smile on your face in any ways.
Definitely. So we've just talked about some of the high points of your career. So what have been some of the low points of your career?
Any fight, I'll tell you this. Your low point is when you get beat because it's your fault. You've been beat and someone's better than you. So it's the worst feeling. You come back and it's funny because people only... It doesn't matter how many wins. I've had 80 fights. I think I've lost 9 altogether out of 80. People only remember your losses. So you could win anything in the world again. I remember they knocked out. So that's all you get off people, you know. So it's, and then people like to keep reminding you of it. My brother's the worst. If you've got brothers and you've been beat, your brother will let you know you've been beat. But that's the thing. And when you're down and like, it's almost suicidal. You've been beat, you're gutted, you're devastated. And like, like I say, when you're on the winning side, everyone's congratulating you. Everyone's like, oh, well done. And then when you're on the losing side, nobody wants to know you. It's a horrible feeling.
Yeah, that must feel like a pretty dark place in comparison to the glory that you feel when you're winning.
It's honestly a downer. It's like it takes a strong mind to come back and actually still want to do it. I know some people, they'll have a great record, get beaten, they'll never want to fight again. But
yeah,
I mean, when I lost that first one, Arnold Adams, I was actually quite ill when I fought. I shouldn't have fought really, but I didn't anyways, and I got beat. And I remember lying in my bed, my trainer Andy was in the next bed because we were in America. I said, that's it, I'm done. I was like, I'm not doing it anymore. And then you lie in bed and you sulk and you're in a little hole for yourself. And then your body's wanting to do something. So like you're lying and you think, I want to get back up and do something. Once you get back in the gym and you're around all your friends again, you're like, no, actually, I want to go back out again. Some people never get back in the gym. So if you've ever had a fight and you've been beat, I tell everyone this, get back in the gym as soon as you can because the people will bring you back up.
Yeah, so that's a good demonstration of resilience right there, isn't it? And we're going to talk about that a lot more as we go through today's discussion.
Yeah.
But resilience definitely is key because, like you say, too many people just sort of give up because they've had a setback. But if they push on through that, then success in world championship can be on the other side of it.
It's a double-edged sword, isn't it? Because the feeling of winning is great, but like the feeling of losing, it's the worst.
Yeah. Opposite ends of the spectrum.
And you feel both. You know what I mean? If you're fighting someone equally as skilled as you, it can go either way. So it's you're either winning or you're losing.
Yeah.
And there's no real other outcome in the fight.
Okay, thank you. So what do you recall as the most important events in your boxing career? So events that have influenced you a great deal?
Obviously winning the BKFC World Title was massive for us. That's a huge organisation. When I won the trials for the Super Combat, I had to go down to Middlesbrough. It was Gary Bell's gym, actually, Contender Gym. So we went down, there was loads of people that come from all over the country. I'd done some trials and a lad called Rustam, I think. I ended up sparring him. I knocked him out and won the, ended up winning, got the trial. I think that's what catapulted us. So I was fighting all over Europe at the time. That was a big moment for us then.
Yeah, significant. So has anything important happened to you recently in your general life?
My son's having a kid. That was a shock. Coming on Christmas Day and told me. Took us about 2 weeks to let it settle in. But obviously over the moon now. He's been with his girlfriend quite a while, little Maddie. She's a mental ass as well, you know. So got to get that going. I've got a flat that I'm busy doing up for them. So get them in the flat and then make sure they're comfortable, you know. And then I've got my other son. He's got a girlfriend. She's going to be moving in hours now. So place one son with a daughter-in-law, you know. So
you've got a very busy family life and a baby on the way, so that'll be great.
You know what it is, family's good, you know, I like family, so... It's funny now, though, because the kids are different when we were younger. When we were younger, like, you were talking to your parents. All I get off my kids now is what's for tea. You know what I mean? So it doesn't matter what happens, you come down, what's for tea? When's tea ready? Is there any toilet roll? My kids shite for fun, you know, so... They just go through bog rule, like, you know what?
I can't remember. Yeah, my son was, that's pretty much he, like what he was like. He always just what's for tea and then I'd go and hide in their bedroom. And you don't see
them. Back in my day, you played out. And now, if you tell your kid to play out, it's a punishment. They want to be in on the computers, you know, it's crazy.
So what were your goals when you first started your sport?
Nothing. I had no goals. I used to play football. And I was actually, I had done a rewire for a lad called Graham Kelso. He had a flat 2 rows up from mine and he was a boxer. And as I was talking to him, he says, you should give it a go. And he took us up to Barry Norman's gym and that's where my boxing career started. And to be fair, I just went for fitness and I learned something. And then it was strange because I thought I'd done something wrong. And Barry used to take us off to one side and I had to just kick the bag. And so I'd do 200 kicks a leg. And I was thinking at the time, have I done something wrong? It's like everybody else is doing that. I think what it was, I kicked hard and his daughter Vicky just take him over there, he can kick hard, make sure he kicks. And then within a year, he gives a fight. I ended up getting a fight. But I ended up having to lose a lot of weight for that fight. And I went into Barry's gym running about 16 off, 17 stone. And Barry got us a fight at 13 stone. So I looked like Freddie Mercury when he was dying of AIDS.
Wow, that's quite a significant weight loss, isn't it?
It was. I was, back in the day, I used to have 4 chicken breasts a day. One of them I would have, I see my broccoli roll. Andy's over there trying to get Andy to eat broccoli roll once. He didn't enjoy it. So I'd have chicken breast with a bit of broccoli. And then when I was going to the gym on the night time, I'd have a small sweet potato. And that's what I had every day. And then for a treat, I used to cut up carrots and leave them in water because carrots are quite sweet. And I used to eat a carrot before the gym. And that was my treat.
That's discipline for you, isn't it?
It was horrible.
So what are your present goals?
Present goals, it's funny enough, because I'm 40 now, 41 shortly. Just want to keep winning. People say, how long you got left? And I says, well, till your body gives up. At the minute, I'm still beating everybody sparring and stuff. So I think once you start getting beaten you in gym, it's time to, you know, like you're coming to the end. But at the minute, I'm doing fine. Just got to keep training, keep fit, make sure I don't get injuries.
Yeah, so keep going the way you go. Keep on at it, yeah. So who have been the most significant people, would you say, in your sports participation?
I always like to thank Graham Kelso. He got us into it. Andy's been good. Baz is over there as well. He's good, you know, because we used to run one gym. Obviously, the COVID and stuff kicked in, so we end up shutting. Neil downstairs, he's got this gym, the O'Toole's gym. Richie as well, he owns it as well. Great advice off all of them, you know, so like, doesn't matter what you've got wrong, there's always somebody in the gym that can give you a little bit of advice, you know, so they're all great supporting roles for us.
So what role did these people play in your development? Obviously, you've mentioned a little bit about Graham Kelso introducing you to boxing. Anything else that you can say?
Oh, Graham.
About all the people that you've just mentioned, about how they help support you in your development.
Obviously, you've got Andy and Abba, Andy and Baz. Like I say, we ran the gym together and... I've known Andy a lot of years and Barry from Barry Norman's days. So we're clicking eyes like my best pal as well as my trainer. So I've been away with Andy loads of times, never had an argument, never had a crossword. Yeah, I mean, people call me like a married couple, we're bigger like a married couple. But I know what he's thinking, he knows what I'm thinking. If I say, right, we're going to do this, he'll come with us and say, I think you're right, but maybe just try this. So we'll work well together. Baz is a great technician in boxing, so he can give you good advice on what you're doing as well.
Yeah, because communication is key, isn't it? To understanding each other, to understand what you need to do. And it sounds like you've got a really good relationship there.
The best thing about this gym is the banter. And I think everybody needs it. You know, if you go to a gym, there's no banter, there's no atmosphere. In this gym, everyone rips the piss out of everyone. Nobody gets out of it. It's like, you're in there, you can do something wrong, and that's it, you get griefed out of it. I mean, we've got a group chat. I think my name in the group chat's called Tits now. They say I've got fat tits, so that's my name in the group chat. But that's the way we are, you know. Everything's a piss take, everything. And I think it makes, you know, when you come to the gym, the gym's hard, you know, it's horrible. But, you know, when you've got people ripping the piss out of you all the time, it keeps you going, you know. It's like a laugh.
Yeah, so it's boys banter as well, isn't it? It's not just a place where you train and work hard. You have a fun together with people who are supportive.
That's what my last called it, the playground.
So how satisfied? It sounds like you are happy with the support that you get from those around you. So in terms of family, friends and coaches, do you have a very good... It sounds like you have a very good support network.
I do, obviously, like, a lot of it's back home as well, you know. My wife is absolutely sound, you know. So, like, a lot of... Yeah, a lot of people, you know, come to the gym, the wife's giving it that. You're kind of sick of doing this, you're at the gym too much. My wife is just basically, go on, do what you've got to do. And then when I go back... I mean, she tells us off, I'm on my phone a lot, limited. But when I go back, I try to give good quality family time as well, you know.
Yeah, and your wife puts up with a lot of stick and banter from you. I know from your Facebook posts, it's very comical and it's a lovely interaction that you have together.
It's funny, you know, because I wind her up non-stop, you know. Because, you know what, it's just my best pal as well as my wife, you know. But, like, she keeps saying to me that this is my wife. People keep asking my wife, what you're still doing with me, is your mental? And she reminds us every day, you know. People keep asking us, am I mental to be with you? But she is mental, and since she is with us, you know, so we get on.
You make a good team.
Honestly, she's like me pal, you know, as well as my wife, you know. Yeah. She's sound.
So you have a very good support network around you. So how important is that during challenging times?
Well, you know, it is like my wife can have a laugh as well, but my wife can just say, you've been a knob, pack it in. You know what I mean? She's, I'll listen to what she says. You've got to, you know, it's your wife, you're getting ET. You know what I mean? So if I come in, my wife says, you're doing this wrong, you're doing that wrong, I've got to listen because I want my dinner later on, you know? So she's got to turn this off.
Good. Someone needs to keep you in line, I guess. So you've just mentioned about food, so that brings us on to lifestyle choices. So how do your lifestyle choices, such as exercise, diet, sleep, alcohol, contribute to overall performance? And I know you don't drink, yep. But...
Well, I drink twice a year. I drink on a Christmas and on my birthday. My birthday's in June. At the minute, I'm heavyweight. So back in the days, I was on the chicken and broccoli. Now I can't sneak in a couple of cakes, you know. But on this fight, I've lost 20 pounds for this fight from the last one. So I've tried to keep it quite clean and healthy. I'm drinking a lot more water. That's the killer, you know, pop. Don't, you know, like fizzy pop. It's a killer, bloat you, it's horrible. But it's addictive, I think, if you're drinking a lot of fizzy pop and you're not getting it, you want it. But I like eating a lot of red meat as well. I think red meat's great for your training. People say the red meat puts a weight on you, and what happens is it takes a day and a half for your red meat to digest. So if you're eating red meat every day, every half a day, you're putting on more weight. So that's why people have white meat, but it's bland in it. I like red meat, I like steak. So I'll try and eat red meat 3 or 4 times a week, and I'll try and eat white meat 2 to 3 times a week, and then I'll have a takeaway as well at some point. But that's the heavyweight life, isn't it?
So do you find heavyweight life in terms of eating a lot easier than
it's much easier, you know when you're training hard but you're starving, it's horrible. When you're training hard but you can go home and have an Indians later on, who cares? I mean,
yeah. So I have heard somewhere that you do like cakes.
I do like cakes, yeah.
So of being heavyweight, you can eat cakes after matches.
You know what it is, I used to always have a cherry pie before a fight. And I'm famous for that really around the northeast, but it's the jam, sugar. So if you're gonna have a fight and like you leave the crust, you know, like I like cherry pies, you know, so like you get them from Morrison's, Tesco's, places they are, they're a quid. So I used to get a full cherry pie, but it's the jam you have to, and what it is, it's the sugar. So if I kind of get a cherry pie wherever I'm at, I'll get like a pack of jelly babies or Star Mix, you know, a Haribo Star Mix. Just get some sugar in you, and because you're gonna bleed in your fight. So if you're fighting, you're losing blood, you're losing that glycemic sugar. So if you've got that little bit of sugar pack in you, you'll be all right.
Some good tips there.
Eat sweets.
So in terms of sleep, do you want to just share with me like your sleep schedule?
Sleep schedule's hard at the minute because usually I'll go to bed around about 9:30 and like I'll get up at like 6 in the morning. But at the minute, because... LA is that far behind us, it's 8 hours behind. I've now kind of tried to practice staying awake later because when I fight, it'll be like five, six in the morning. So I need to try and get my body being awake at 5, 6 in the morning. Usually I'm getting up at that time. So that's a hard bit. So like, my wife will go to bed and I'll try and sit in the front room and try and watch the telly quietly so I don't wake the family up. And then you just sit there bored shitless, really. You sit there all night. So I think sometimes I'll go for a run late at night, but in the winter it's not very good going for a run late at night.
Yeah, it's a bit cold here, isn't it?
Luckily, Richie used to open the gym up for us at 4:30 in the morning, so I would stop up all night, and then me and Richie would come and get on the treadmills together 4:30 in the morning.
That's good teamwork.
Richie's a fit lad. He's one of the corners of the gym. He's a fit lad as well, you know, so he's faster than me. So on the treadmill, and like I run at 14.5, 15 kilometres an hour. Richie's running at 16 to 17. So, and he's about my size, you know, he's fit. He's really fit.
So in terms of, you mentioned a little bit about training and about lifestyle. So can you discuss the importance of the balance between training intensity and rest?
I used to rest once a week. And I think as I was getting older, I wanted to rest twice a week. But like I was meant to rest yesterday and I forgot. It's just in your brain, like, I've got to go to the gym, I'm going to the gym. You just forget, you know, and like, what I try and do now is I have an active rest. So I'll come in the gym and I'll like, today I've done pads and I'll only run. But sometimes I'll try and do pads, run, strength and conditioning, a couple of hours of weights. Maybe come up, try and do shuttle stuff like that. So today I'll just do pads and run. That's an active rest for me. I'll do 5 kilometres, 12 rounds of pads.
So do you find it difficult to have a total rest?
Yeah. It's when you're in there and your body's wanting to go all the time. So if I am resting, I'm usually sat in the house. My legs are going up, thinking, what can I do? I need to do something. So like, it's hard, you know. You know you need the rest, but you think, I could do this, I could do that. But the problem is, if you overtrain, that's when you injure. So like, on the last fight, I actually ripped my calf 3 weeks before the fight. So I'd already done a 5 kilometre run, 12 rounds of pads, strength and conditioning in the morning. And then 2 hours of weights on my chest. And I was sat there and I thought, I'm going to do something else here. So I started doing shuttle runs. So what I'll do is, it's over there. You run the first line, run backwards, second line, run backwards, third line, run backwards. And I think I was on about my fifth or sixth round of doing it. And I ripped my calf. So I was 3 weeks out from the fight. I was like, oh no, I'm going to be knackered here. I've strapped it up. And just tried to rest it as best I could really to the fight. And luckily, it didn't affect us that much.
Yeah, so you just touched on injuries there. So what injuries, other than the one you've just described, have you had in the past and how has it impacted your training and competitive performance?
I've had loads of injuries. You look at my hands, I've got a big lump in my hand there, broke that hand, got a plate in it, snapped the plate.
That's some lump.
They put a metal plate in it, I snapped the screw. Me and Baz, I fought John Lewis there, I've just pulled it back in again. So anyway, I snapped the plate. Me and Baz were in the changing room, we pulled it back. So it was sort of half in line. Went to the hospital, the vet rated it. He says, I've done an all right job of it. So he's just going to leave it at that, you know. So broke that one. I keep breaking it's punching wrong, you know. I should punch them too. Broke them, but I broke that. I've got a lump on there. Broke that one. Snap, I tore my IT band. Break my jaw nearly every fight. Just one of them. You're getting punched in the face of a 19-stone man. It hurts, you know. So it's funny. You've got to get your mindset into the fight. So, like, I'm usually it's 2 or 3 weeks before I start getting nervous. Like, on that last fight, we went to a fight show at BKFC in Leeds. I'll come up the show and one of the lads, he had a hematoma on his head about that big. It was massive. And I'm looking at him thinking, that's me next week. You know what I mean? So, like, I'll sit in the house and I'll think, I'm going to break my jaw. I'm going to break my hand. I'm going to get cut to bits. And then you just sort of sit there and you visualise it's going to happen. And like, I'm a realist. If I go outside and it's raining, I'm going to get wet. If I play boxing, I'm going to break my jaw. I'm going to get stitches. I'm going to break my hand. So once you come to terms with it, once you get into the fight, it takes all the nerves away. You're like, I know it's going to happen. And if it doesn't happen, it's a bonus.
Yeah, that's one good way of looking at it, I guess, isn't it? So how do you manage stress outside of the ring and how does it impact your performance in the ring? Because obviously you've talked about how you manage the stress of thinking that you're going to get injured. So how do you manage like day-to-day stress?
I'm lucky I don't really get that stressed. even with the you know, you're saying it's stress of the thing, it's not just accepting what's going to happen. It's not a stress. I think once you accept what's going to happen to you, it's easier. And I think that's going to happen. And if something better happens, it's a bonus.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. Rather than worrying about what may or may not happen, you've accepted something will happen along the line.
Not for the worst. If anything better happens, you're in.
So that brings on to talking about the psychological side of the boxing. So how do you prepare to face different opponents with varying styles and strategies?
Well, like I said, me and Andy, we'll go on like the last fight there. Arnold's my size. He's got a longer reach and a faster jab. And at the time, I'd actually slipped 4 discs last year, January last year. So I've had a trapped nerve running down my arm, and which meant my arm was inactive, really. I couldn't even lift it past there at one point. So what I had says on that fight, I'm going to put a lot of weight on. I'm going to take a lot of punishment. So that's what I'm saying. You visualise that I'm going to get punched a lot because I can't throw my jab as well as I should. So I put loads of weight on, and I knew if I leant on him, I would tire him. So that was the game plan. Lean on him, push him on the back foot as best you can, make him work because he gets tired. And then when he gets tired, punish him. On this fight, to be honest, I thought I was going to be fighting Ben Rothwell. He's a bigger unit, so I thought I'd get a little and faster. It turns out it's Lorenzo. Lorenzo's small and fast as well, himself. So we've been working on a lot of power shots, although I've lost weight. I'm punching a lot harder than what I ever have.
That's good. So you just have to adapt your style and your training regime to match the opponent.
Usually if you're fighting a big person, you want to be a little and faster. If you're fighting a little fast person, you want to be big and heavy. So I'm lucky. I usually fight on the back foot, and I was never a heavyweight. So I was always concerned about going forward because I thought, am I punching hard enough? And over the past few fights, I've realised when I go forward, I knock people out. So I think I've realised I can knock you out. So if I do go on the front foot, I'll be all right. And if it goes bad for us, I'm better on the back foot anyways.
So your next fight is in LA. So you mentioned a little bit before about preparing when you're fighting in different time zones. So how do you actually prepare for a different time zone?
You stop up all night. That's the only thing you can do. It's like I say, normally I'll go to bed at 9, get up at 5 or 6. Now I've got to go to bed, like at the minute I'm trying to go to bed 3, 4 in the morning. And then I get up later, which means I come to the gym later. And then eventually what will end up happening is I'll start going to bed at like 7, 8 o'clock in the morning, which means I get back in the gym for 5, 6 in the morning, get a circuit out, go to sleep during the day, come back in the evening. So you're going to end up splitting your training into 2 sessions because you want to train roughly when you're fighting, which is going to be 5 or 6 in the morning, go back to sleep, come back, do more training later in the evening when you've woke back up.
And when you go to LA, how much time are you going to go before the actual fight?
Usually it's about 4 to 5 days, I think, they give you. I mean, the last time we were in Salt Lake City, and we still hadn't gotten totally adjusted at the time. So what we'd done is we sat in the pool till 11 o'clock every night in the hotel. And I thought, if I fall asleep, I'll drown. So I've got to stay awake, you know what I mean? So just sat in that pool all night, and then, like, my eyes were stinging. But I stayed awake till 12 o'clock, you know, like, so by the time I went back, my room got showered. It was midnight, so I thought, I'm ready for the fight, I can stay awake.
Yeah. So these are all extra things that stress your body, aren't they, and affect your training regime. But it sounds like you cope with them really well.
You've got to have a plan. I think, like I say, I plan everything. So if I've planned it, that's the worst thing that could happen. Anything else is a bonus.
Yeah, that's good. So when you went to Salt Lake, you mentioned about altitude.
Yeah.
So how did you train for that?
To be honest, you know, I bought altitude mask, and everybody was saying they don't really work, and they don't. So I bought this mask. I was training with a mask on. Basically what it does, it cuts off your air. And you get a little flap in it and you adjust it or whatever, and you get no oxygen. And when you get it, there was nothing to do with oxygen. It's like, you're that high up. What happened was that? It'd be something to do with oxygen, but your body just stops and stops working. So we went shopping. It was higher up the game from where we're stopping. You feel faint. So like your body starts going limp and faint. And like, I don't know if it's because I was bigger and heavier than the lads I had with us. I think I was feeling it quicker. So we went over there, and usually on the last week you don't do any training. But we took pads over, and I says, I want to do pads, see what it's like. So we're hitting pads, and like I say, the banter we've got in the gym, if you've got any sort of injury, we call it softitis. So I didn't want to say it, I'm feeling this altitude. So Andy's doing the pads, and I can feel like I'm getting tired quicker than normally because I'm not getting oxygen through my body. So now as I'm hitting pads, and I remember Andy started hoeing a few wrong combinations. So he might say double jab right hand. And as I'm trying to throw it, he's hoeing a left hook. So I was thinking, hey, what's going on? He went, are you feeling this? And I went, are you feeling it? He went, I'm feeling it. I said, well, if you're feeling it, I'm feeling it. Because he's admitted he's soft before me. You know what I mean? So that's the sort of banter we have.
Yeah. So did you feel like it slowed you down?
Yeah. Because it's horrible that you don't realise until you start exerting your body. So let's say you ran up the stairs. I don't know, did you ever get COVID?
Yeah.
I felt like COVID. You know, you're trying to run up the stairs and your body fatigues. That's what it felt like. It just felt like you just zapped energy.
So we just talked a little bit about preparation and how you prepare for a fight. So how do you prepare yourself mentally for a big fight? So like what are your thoughts and feelings that are going on?
I think to prepare yourself properly for a big fight, first of all, you need to be fit. So if you know you're fit, you're halfway there, you know. Because I see a lot of people pretend they're fit. They pretend that they've done the runs. They pretend that they've done the training. And then you see them in the changing rooms and they're cacking their pants, you know, they're thinking, shit, I'm going to get filled in. Because that's the problem with this game, especially at the stage I'm at, everyone's watching. So if you haven't trained and you haven't prepared, you're all going to get beat up and the whole world's going to watch you get beat up. So you've got to make sure you're all fit, you're all prepared. So that's the main thing, make sure you're fit. Secondly, is like you say, when you're mentally getting there, say, like, have the game plan, know your game plan. So me and Andy will have a game plan. I'll say, right, this is what we want to do. And then we'll make sure we drill that and it becomes second nature. It's almost like you're breathing it, you know, you know what shot's coming next. So a couple of times we'll do pads and let's say I'm doing a 1-2, right, the body. I know for a fact, and he hasn't said he's going to do it, but I know the pad's coming then, I'm throwing the left hook because I know what's coming next. So it's, you're mentally prepared for what's coming next. And I think, as like I say, if you've got the game plan down and you're fit, you're sound.
It sounds like you've got a very good preparation there going on in what you identified as a lot of people in the changing room who are out of breath. A lot of people don't prepare properly and that's what lets them down, but it sounds like you do cover all bases.
Like you say, you've got to, because if you don't, everyone's watched you and you get discovered. You're like, he hasn't trained, he's not fit. I mean, I would hate it, but it's horrible because I think my first 8 or 9 fights, I just knocked everybody out straight away. And then I remember I thought, I don't have to train. So I had the next fight and I was a good kid. So now anyway, I've had the fight and then I struggled. I won the fight, but it was a struggle. I thought I wasn't fit. And it's a horrible feeling when you go in there and it's a lonely, lonely place. You know, even if someone's got a faster pace than you, but if you're not fit and then you've steamed out on the kid, you've hit him with loads of shots and then he hasn't fell over and you're thinking, shit, how am I going to get beat up here? And I'm that tired, I can barely keep my hands up. So it's a lonely, lonely place if it goes wrong. So I just don't want to be that person that's getting filled in when I'm tired, because it's, you're getting knocked out, especially in bare knuckle heavyweight, you're getting put to sleep.
Yeah, like you've identified, it's an individual sport and it's you there alone in the ring with your opponent. There's no one coming to help you. There's no one coming to save you. You've got to dig real deep.
It's the running. Nobody can make you run. Like, I'll run in, yeah, just so they know I'm running. I mean, you can run outside if you want. Also, I'm 40 now. If I get injured, I can jump off and go straight home. I don't want to be running around Tynemouth and then having to get a taxi back home. So what I do is I'll run here. But the reason why I do it is so the lads know I'm running. Because usually the lads, when they train you, they're doing the pad work for you. They know you've done the pad work. You look sharp on the pads. But it's very different when you're getting hit back. Anybody look good on the pads. But as soon as someone punches you in the face, you'll see the energy drain out of them. And if you haven't done the road work, you can see it because you delay things. You know, when you're not fit, you might see a shot. You think, I'll land that shot, but if I throw it, I might tire myself out and I'll get hit back. And you see them hesitating. I'm not throwing that shot because I'm not fit enough. And like when you're fit enough, you can throw any shot you want. And I don't know, I think you see things better because you're fitter. You're not, when you're sweating and you're knackered, you cannot see the shots, you're tired. When you're all fit, you're all ready, you can see everything, you're aware of everything.
Yeah, you're sharper.
Yeah.
So do you actually have a pre-performance routine?
I go to sleep. So usually what I'll do is I like to hit pads. I like to go in early and I like to hit pads as hard as I can. So I'll put every bit of ounce of power I've got in every... And it's probably not even technically right. I want to hit it as hard as I can. Of getting that little bit of aggression out, because I think it's wrong to go into a fight full of aggression. because I think you make mistakes when you're too aggressive. So I get all my aggression out, I get a good sweat on, I go to sleep, I wake up, I do some light parts, and then that's it, I'm out.
And how long did it take you to refine that routine?
I haven't had, like, you just, you find things, because, like, I've had a lot of fights now, so, like, you start off and you, like, some coaches will make you do pads right up your fight, and then you think, I was knackered in that fight, and I think it was because I'd done the pads. So, like, I'm not a stupid person, you know, I'm quite switched on, so I think, I'll do my pads a little bit earlier, I'll get the second wind, and then sometimes you might do your pads too early, and then you're cold again when you get out, so you've got to make sure you just get the timing right. So I like to, like I say, hit the pads as hard as I can, get the sweat on, cool down, then I do light pads to warm myself back up, and then I'm in.
So it sounds like you've got good self-awareness of what works for you and what doesn't work for you, and you've seemed to have developed that over the years.
I'm lucky at that, because I overthink the game. That's probably why I'm good at the game, though. But like, if I'm sparring, I know, let's say I'm sparring, could be in the third round, I've been caught with a shot, I know exactly where I was stood in the ring, why I moved there. So what I'll do is I'll go home and I'll overthink it. So I'll sit there and I'll go, I've been punched there because I stepped on my right, whereas really I should have stepped back and then stepped my left, come out of the danger, come away. So I'll overthink what I've done there for about 4 or 5 hours, and I think, I shouldn't have been there. I've been hit because I was there. Really, I should have done that. So when I come back, when I spar again, I'll make sure I don't step to the right. But it's funny, you know, when you're saying self-awareness, like, I know exactly where I am all the time in the ring. I know exactly where I should be, where I need to be. I know how to close somebody into a space, so I've been lucky that way.
So you've got good spatial awareness there. Okay. And what you were just describing there, essentially, is a form of imagery. So when you're picturing yourself, and do you watch yourself again, like you're looking at a video recorder when you analyse it?
I mean, when I'm sparring, no, I know it's in my mind, because you've been punched, you know what I mean? And it hurts. So like, if someone's punched me in the head, I think, I don't want to be punched.
So how do you run through it, though? Can you see yourself? Are you imagining? Are you just sort of...
I'm quite relaxed when I'm in there, so I'm that relaxed. I know exactly what's going on, and like, I think as well, you know, back in the day, we used to have like 2 or 3 pairs sparring in the ring at the same time, so you had to be aware who was over there, because if you're sparring, I don't want to go over there because I don't want to get kicked off somebody over there. And so I think I always just become aware of where
but
when you were saying, do you watch things back in me fights,
like I meant in terms of you when you're thinking about your fight.
I'll just run it through my memory.
Yeah, so it's like memory. A visual memory that you've got that you're running through.
But it's different, you know, like when you fight, it's obviously it's recorded. So it doesn't matter if I've won a fight or lost a fight, I'll watch my fight every time. And what I do is I'll record every round, and I'll go through and I'll see how many shots I've landed. So I'm not even watching the fight. I just say, right, I threw 25, 40 shots. I've landed 15 shots. So I'll write that down, and I'll go to my opponent and I'll count. So I'll go back the same round. I'll say, right, he's through 30 shots, he's through 15, and I'll go the next round. So I get all the numbers and I analyse it. Like that last one, when you Arnold throws, lands 25 shots around. So the game plan was get Arnold to throw 35 to 40 shots around, he'll tire quicker. So what I was doing was, like I say, watching Arnold's fights. On this fight, first round he throws 25 shots, second round he throws 27 shots on an average. Third round, he throws 30. If I can get him to throw more shots than that, he'll tire quicker. So that's what I do. I'll go around, I'll say, right, I need to get him. So that's what I'm saying. I've stood in Arnold's face, because when I'm there, Arnold thinks he's in danger. He's got to throw more shots at me. If I can get him to throw more than 30 shots, I'm on a winner.
So what you are describing there is you've been using imagery when you're rerunning it through your memory on what you were doing and your strategy.
Yeah.
And also when you're... watching video recordings of yourself, and then it's very good what you've done, what you've just described there in terms of preparation, about thoroughly analysing your opponent and looking at how they perform.
It's all numbers. I like maths, me. I love maths, you know. So everything's numbers to me. If I can break it down, and it's percentages. So if I can get the percentage in my favour, I'm on a winner.
So you just touched on there a little bit about how you evaluate your performance after a fight. Is there anything else that you do?
Like I say, I never watch my fight to see how well I've done. I never go, no, you done mint there. I watch and I think, I've been punched there. I moved that way. Should have done that. So it's exactly the same as what I do in the sport when I'm doing it in my mind, apart from I get to see it. So I think I've been caught there because I've moved that way. I should have moved that way. So you come back the week later in the gym, once you healed up, you're like, right, I'm going to start circling this way or move that way just to try and adjust so you don't get hit again.
And then how do you refocus after setbacks before and during a fight?
Like before the fight, you know, like you say, you get injured. So I ripped my calf. So that was it. Once you rip your calf, I stopped running. I went on the exercise bike. Or I break my hand. I might break my right hand during the preparation. That's it. You just do everything on your left hand. So what you do is you put a weight in your right hand. And you don't hit the pad, but you throw it. So you still lift up the weight. So you're still training stuff. So unless you break both your legs and both your arms, you're not good. But if I only break, I mean, when I fought that Steve Banks, I broke my foot. I got burgled. And then as I caught the burglar, then I've put it a mile away, I broke my foot. So I couldn't run for that fight. So everything's on the treadmill. On the exercise bike. So you've just got to work around different things. If that's injured, you work on that. If these are injured, you work on your running.
Yeah, so that's like a really resilient mindset you're describing there, because often someone who maybe they'll have an injury and they can no longer do a particular exercise that they want to do will just say, oh, well, I'm not doing it now. Whereas you're very flexible, adaptable, you'll find a way of making it work.
You've got to be fit in this game. If you're not fit, you're really going to get hurt. So like I say, if my foot's injured, I know for a fact my upper body can work. If my upper body's sore, I know my legs can run. You've just got to be, the key to this game is fitness.
Yeah, so you haven't got the advantage of playing as part of a team either. Whereas if you are injured, you can sort of hide behind your teammates to some degree.
You don't get that.
Spotlight's on you.
When you get beat, it's your fault.
So, and then in terms of staying focused on training and fights, how do you do that when life throws you a curveball?
You know what it is, you treat it as two different things, and my wife's really good at this for us. I've got to go to the gym at them times, so my wife knows I'm there at them times, so she'll leave us alone on them times. When you come back, you deal with your personal life different. So it doesn't matter what's like, my dad's busy, my dad's got cancer at the minute, so...
Sorry to hear.
No, he's doing fine, to be honest. I think he's doing better when he first went in. So when you're dealing with your dad outside the gym, but in the gym, you've got to forget about your dad. It sounds horrible. It's a sport where you've got to focus on yourself. So when I'm in the gym for them hours, I focus on me. As soon as I come out, try and ring my dad, see how he's doing, go and see him. The same with my wife. Like my wife's got something wrong with her at the minute, so like she's back and forward to the hospital. So like once I've done with the gym, I'm straight back. I mean, every now and then, just my phone is up. Once I had to leave the gym, luckily, because usually my phone's on silent, I just heard it that day, rush off the hospital. But if it's an emergency, obviously you go to your family. But usually you have your gym, you do your gym, get that out of the way, do your family.
Yeah.
Two separate lives.
So you're very good at compartmentalising all these different elements which help it all work.
Yeah.
Okay. So what do you believe sets world champions and professional athletes apart from others?
Determination. It's like I say, you know, when things are going wrong, you still go to the gym. If that's not working, your arm's not working, you train your leg. If your leg's not working, you train your hands. Like you say, you've just got to be versatile, just keep going, just keep plugging away. Like you say, I've got a sniffle the day I'm not coming in. Stop being soft, get yourself in the gym. You know, I mean, if you were... Boxing is a game where anybody, I mean, it just proves that I'm from a council estate. Ball and shields, went to Shamwa, nothing there, absolutely nothing. As soon as I've come over, start boxing, I've went far because I've got determination I can go for, and I started boxing late. I started kickboxing at 23, I didn't start boxing until I was about 28, and I've went quite far. So if I could have started at 11, and I had, let's say, were rich, I throw money at your kid, go and get the gym every day. I didn't get that opportunity. I just went because I had good determination. I like having a fight. So I think if you've got that, you can go for.
Yeah, and what you're describing there is essentially resilience and mental toughness. And there's something to be said by sort of not having it easy. That helps develop mental toughness and resilience.
I would say I had a good upbringing, but like you say, you know, like outside of the house, you know, back in, like I was saying, back in our day, used to play out. There was always older kids. You know, when you live on an estate, there's always a gang of older kids picking on the younger kids. So you were always into a scrape, you know. There was always something, you know, like, oh, you kind of go there, that lad's going to fill you in. Them team there pinch your football off you. You know what I mean? It happened all the time, you know, so you just, you had to be used to it, you know. So I think it does make you tougher.
Yeah, so you learned how to deal with it in those situations, which helps you become...
It's like streetwise, and then you become more streetwise.
So what advice would you give to someone striving to become a world champion in any discipline?
I'm glad he says any discipline, because if someone to be a world champion in bantamweight boxing when they were young, I would say don't do it. But in any discipline, train hard, have a game plan, and stick to it.
So is there anything else you'd like to say today that you haven't had a chance to say?
No, I think I've said enough. I think I've said loads, haven't I?
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. It's been a pleasure to have you talking about resilience, mental toughness, about being a world champion and what it takes to get there.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having us.
So would you just like to take this opportunity to thank your sponsors?
Yeah, I've got two great sponsors. Obviously, the gym, O'Toole's Gym. Honestly, I'd be lost without them. They let us do whatever I want in this gym, you know, it's their gym, and they just say, go on, Mick, you've got free rein, you know. So Neil and Richie have been great for us on there. And I've got Mark Bailey, he's my main sponsor, a computer clinic, Mark and his wife, Gillian. And without them, I couldn't be fighting, because them let us train full-time now. So he's a great help to us. Now, you know what it is, he's a great help to loads of fighters. He helps everybody. Doesn't matter what show you're on, what level of fighting you're on, he will help anybody, you know, and he's the main people. But I couldn't do it without Morgan and Gillian at the minute, because I wouldn't be able to train full time. We've also got our own boxing show on as well, called The Strainer Show, that Morgan's also part of it, me, Andy, Morgan, me pal Morvan. And that'll be on next week as well. So hopefully that'll be a canny little banger event.
So Mick, I'd just like to say on behalf of myself and everyone listening and watching that you are a remarkable man for both your fighting career and the way you approach it, but also your devotion to your family. With a professional record reflecting exceptional skills and mental toughness, which encapsulates your hard work, commitment and sacrifices to the sport of bare-knuckle boxing, which is why you are world champion. Thank you for being so open and sharing your story today. It means a lot.
Yeah, thanks for having us on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Cheers, thank you.